Hi, hello, and welcome. This is the Zonecast, where we interview emerging Canadian professionals, entrepreneurs, and academics. And today we have with us on the show Anna Strawn. She is the professor and program coordinator at the School of Skilled Trades at Sheridan College. Hi, Anna. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you for having me, Salman.
Perfect. Thank you so much. I guess I'll start my first common question. Can you tell us about your professional and personal background?
So my professional background, I actually started off as a tool and die maker and mold maker in a company called Magna International. So I worked with the automotive industry for several years until I became a licensed mold maker in Ontario and tool and die maker by German standards. After my apprenticeship, I became a student again, and I went on a full scholarship to Queen's University for mechanical engineering. And during that time, I had the chance to work in Germany. I had the chance to work in a Kingston hospital doing research on human mobility. And moving forward after that, I did a few different things, including opening up my own business for research and development tax credit consultation. I also worked as a research and development engineer and subsequently got a patent on my work there. And after having two kids, I wanted to take it a little bit easier and decided to start teaching part-time. And that actually turned into a full-time job, and now I'm teaching full-time, and also I'm the program coordinator and student academic advisor, and at the same time, I'm also pursuing my Master's of Engineering at the University of Toronto, which I'm hoping to wrap up soon.
Wow, so you are teaching and studying at the same time?
Absolutely, yeah.
The path to learning continues.
That's right. I think I'm called a lifelong learner.
Nice.
As some people call it, a professional student.
So one thing I want to address in this episode, and this is something I guess you've been facing, is the impact of the pandemic on the higher education sector. So you worked at the School of Skilled Trades at Sheridan College. How has your particular job been affected by the pandemic?
So back in March, we were basically from, it was announced that we're going to be leaving campus at a certain time on Friday. I think it was March 13th. And we didn't really have time to prepare for what lay ahead. We were just, assuming that it was going to be temporary and short term. And so we all left campus, and by the following week, it was revealed that it would be longer term and that we would be looking at the potential of starting to do online courses and making that paradigm shift in the way that we deliver our content. And so basically we had a very short amount of time to learn new software, become comfortable with it enough to actually lead lessons online. Many of us had to upgrade our hardware and make sure that our students had all of the software that they needed at home as well. So it was a huge undertaking in a very short amount of time, and it was dubbed a Herculean effort on everybody's part to make our winter semester work and to finish off our winter semester. And at that time, everyone was still hoping that we would be able to come back onto campus for, the start of the summer semester. But of course, that didn't happen either. So then started all the planning. And, being the program coordinator, I was involved in a lot of the planning for the summer and determining what courses we could teach online, what we were comfortable teaching online, and also, you know, making sure that we're meeting all of our learning outcomes. So several courses were, of course, in our School of Skilled Trades. We can't teach the same way for our shop online as we could in person because it's all hands-on. So that's something we have not looked at yet. I know some institutions have, and that may be, you know, something that we need to look into for the future. But it was a giant shift for both faculty, administration, and a huge impact on our students as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So you mentioned like the Friday of March 13, the school, I guess, said that you have to leave early. So this is perhaps before the shutdown measures were actually announced and implemented, I assume?
Right. So on that day, that that was basically we were basically told that we can't come back onto campus, but it wasn't, you know, Ontario wide. It wasn't really announced yet. That's right.
Yeah. That's particularly interesting. So what time did you end up leaving on that Friday? I'm guessing it was maybe early afternoon.
Yeah, it was early afternoon. And, I think some professors were really hopeful in, you know, that we would either return or everything would just get kind of suspended. There were a few of us that looked ahead a little bit. So, for example, on that day, instead of doing a test, I completed a lab to make sure that, you know, all of our hands-on content was complete. But a lot of students and professors were left in a position where there was a lot of hands-on content that now had to be somehow delivered online in the winter. And, I really, you know, appreciate all of the effort that the students and the professors put in to make that happen. But we were lucky in that we were close to the end of our semester. So, a lot of the learning objectives have already been met. So it wasn't too detrimental for our winter semester.
Mm-hmm. And, have you seen, are there any courses right now that are being offered in person, or is it completely online at the Sheridan College and at the School of Skilled Trades?
So currently we're all 100% online, and we have finished half of the summer semester now, and in the second half there will be a very small number of courses that are going to be starting back up on campus. So there's huge preparations happening for that with our health and safety committee, with directives from the government, working directly with program coordinators and specific professors and technologists to actually make that happen in a safe way.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of infrastructure adjustments did you have to make to search completely online? I think you mentioned there was some software and hardware upgrade that was needed. So perhaps can you talk more about what kind of technology changes or adjustments had to be made by the faculty and the students so this transition from in-class to online can happen seamlessly?
Right. So that's a really good question. We had we already had a learning platform in place, which Sheridan calls Slate, which is based on the Desire to Learn software. And that learning platform actually includes some virtual classroom applications. And after the pandemic started, Sheridan actually upgraded our virtual classroom component of that software. But in that first few weeks, again, being the program coordinator, I heard a lot from individual professors within my group in the School of Skilled Trades. And we had been trying Google Classroom. People were making YouTube videos. People were using Zoom and all kinds of different software to basically get the ball rolling. So as we kind of move forward, I think everyone kind of converged a little bit into one software. So now we're mostly all working in the virtual classroom on the one platform of Desire to Learn. That's something that was an interesting transition where, you know, everyone kind of, without formal training on how to teach online and without formal instruction on exactly what to do and how to do it, it seemed that everyone, you know, started discovering their own path. And as we, you know, continued our, you know, almost daily meetings, we basically converged on one software that students and faculty all have access to and created a better learning experience for our students, where they don't have to bounce around between softwares depending on their instructor's preference. So that was one big learning experience. Another one was that we do have faculty and students who live in areas with lower quality internet connections. And that was a very difficult thing to overcome because, you know, trying to teach a class live where you don't have a great internet connection, you end up losing and breaking out and having to come back. And, you know, our students were amazing through this whole experience. And, of course, there were a few that used it as an excuse to not complete their coursework and things like that. But I would say the gross majority of students were extremely patient and were very motivated to finish their semester. And now that we've moved into the summer semester, we're seeing the same thing, where there are students who are extremely motivated, they're enjoying the online experience, and there are other students who are just not interested in participating. And that's fine. I mean, this is something that's very different for most people. And it's not something that, anybody anticipated, right?
Yeah. So I guess my next question was going to be, have you seen, now that the students cannot attend the campus, and it's the courses are being delivered online, and then there is also an economic hit. Have you noticed any particular decline in student enrollments or student admissions for the summer semester, or do you see this affecting the number of students who go to college to study?
So for our summer semester, we actually didn't have very much planned for new intakes. We typically don't for the summer semester, so we didn't see too much of an impact there. But moving forward, there is some serious concern about international students. So having restrictions on the mobility of people worldwide, and the ability to get visas and things like that right now is quite uncertain for September. And typically by now, all of that would have been sorted out and in place for September. But due to varying levels of lockdown around the world and our reliance on or a large amount of students that are international, we anticipate that there will actually be a decline in September, and that we'll see much fewer students coming in from overseas, which will severely impact our enrollment if that does happen.
Mm-hmm. And one main thing I want to ask you about, and I think you alluded to this earlier, is at the School of Skilled Trades, what you're teaching is actually skilled trades. So I'm guessing a decent or big portion of your education is lab work and working with equipment, working with machinery, and doing things like tool and dies and whatnot. So, how would you deliver that kind of education online? Has Sheridan or other colleges, universities figured out a way? And is there even a way to teach that online? Maybe is it the case that can only be delivered in person because you need an in-person interactive experience where the person is working in front of a trainer or a skilled technician and learning how to use equipment and machinery. So how's that kind of education going to be delivered?
So that's another really good question, and that's something that's being talked a lot about right now. There are certain things, of course, that lend themselves only to in-class and in-person instruction. So where we have learning outcomes where certain things must be demonstrated. So maybe something that's more familiar to people, and I'm not in the medical field at all, but just as a personal example, if I had a new nurse come in to my hospital room and I'm very sick, and that nurse happened to take an online course on how to, you know, administer an IV, I would be quite nervous, you know, and being unsure if that person actually had that hands-on training with a trainer that showed them how to do it and confirmed that they're able to do it. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's a very specific example that probably a lot of people can relate to. But in tool and die in the trades, it's a similar type of thing, you know. There may be a way, you know, we haven't kind of shut that door. There may be a way to actually, you know, maybe not do it 100% online, but there may be a way to, you know, to through demonstrations and videos, simulators and things like that, there may be a way to get most of the way there. And obviously falling short of in-person demonstration and showing that they can actually do that skill, in person. Right. So I think that's one thing that moving forward, depending on how severe this pandemic is and how much motivation there is to bring more and more of these hands-on courses either into hybrid or online, we will have to be very creative to try to make that happen. A lot more creative than, you know, some of our theoretical courses or math or business courses, right? They easily lend themselves to online, even though that's not the ideal way to teach it. It is a lot easier to envision that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess we don't see any in-person classes before next year, to say the least.
Well, we're planning in September to have some in-person classes, and that plan is moving forward. We obviously have to, it will look very different than what it has looked like in the past due to physical distancing measures, disinfecting procedures and requirements, having a very, very thorough understanding of exactly who's on campus and when, for contact tracing if that becomes necessary. So, there's a lot that's happening that's actually very unknown at the moment, to me at least, because we don't know where Ontario is going to be in September. So we have a plan and we're moving forward with it, but it will only include specific classes that we feel require students to be on campus to complete. And that will require, you know, smaller class sizes. It will require much more planning to make sure that students are being kept safe, as well as the instructors and technologists are staying safe and are, you know, following any guidelines that the government has provided.
Mm-hmm. Will there be any kind of physical distancing in the classroom to keep students away from each other?
Absolutely. So in the classroom, currently, and this of course could change between now and semester and September, but currently the idea is that in any given space, we always want to have the minimum number of people and have the minimum amount of contact. So if there does happen to be a class happening in person, I'm foreseeing that especially now that in Toronto, masks are required indoors. So I'm anticipating that in September, all of our in-person courses will require everybody to be wearing masks when they're indoors, perhaps even gloves, and also maintaining that 2-meter distance. So in some of our labs, that works out very well, where our machines are spaced far enough apart, or they can use every other machine or things like that. But there are some labs where space is very tight and the number of students that will physically fit in there with 2 meters of space between them is extremely limited.
Mm-hmm. And if let's say a student happens to acquire COVID on campus, do you think that could be a potential liability issue for any college if a student happens to acquire COVID on campus? Like, they might, do you think colleges and universities can be held liable for such outbreaks, let's say, or if someone happens to acquire COVID on campus? I guess one question is, how do you know it happened on campus? But let's say if you knew, do you think that could be a potential problem?
So that's something that I think is out of my scope to comment on. I think that, any time that you have people coming into campus and being in close contact, as with any of our social situations, or even doing necessary things like grocery shopping, anything that we do right now where we could potentially be in contact with people does contain some risk in it. And the most that we can do is, use the government directives and do the best that we can to protect the students and ourselves as much as possible. But as for liability, that's something that I can't really comment on because I don't. That's not my area of expertise or knowledge.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Perfect. So yeah, those were all my questions about how the pandemic is affecting the higher education sector. So thank you so much for sharing your expertise and insights.
Oh, thank you very much. And I hope this doesn't last too much longer. But if it does, looking back on the past few months and how much innovation and how much work and dedication both students, faculty, and administration have all shown, I think that, our future is bright and we have lots of possibilities. And if this does last longer and continue on, there may be a permanent shift in post-secondary education with more openness to doing online learning and seeing the value in that.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly hope this doesn't last very long. And I'm also curious to see how in September or January, how the colleges and universities and the government figure out the whole situation of international students, because we know that is a key aspect of Canadian post-secondary education sector, and Canada is a big education market, and a lot of students come here every year from different parts of the world. So I'm curious to see how that happens, if there are any travel restrictions or not, and how that will happen in September. So I'm definitely curious to see how that unfolds. But as you said, hopefully things will turn out for the better. So thank you again for sharing your expertise. And listeners, I hope you enjoy this particular episode and you find it to be insightful, and be optimistic about the future. And thank you so much for listening to Zonecast, and stay tuned for more episodes.